All right, welcome back to Bears on Tap. I'm your host today, Joey Ricotta at The Riot 326. And joining me is Quentin at Buck Castats. We don't have a couple of the normal panelists like B-Don and Ron Luce. Ron, of course, is at the game or was at the game. And
poor guy.
Yeah, poor guy. Absolutely poor guy. Him and Buzz were at the game, and Joe Herf was at the game too. So a few guys I knew that were there, but obviously Buzz on tap here on tap. Yeah, man, B-Don was at the Detroit field yesterday for the MACtion game, the MAC championship. But we're gonna go ahead and try to dive in and dissect this one, man. This is a brutal one. I'm fucking pissed. Maybe I shouldn't be like. We should know what is going to happen at this point. Like, coming to this game, you knew with Kyler coming back and Justin Fields out, Hopkins coming back for the Cardinals, you knew things weren't looking right. They weren't going to be nice with A-Rob still out. You got Hicks still out. So, I don't know, Quentin. I guess I should just ask how you're doing, because I'm not doing well.
I'm doing okay. You know, I'm kind of – I don't want to say tuned out, but as far as the Bears go, it's like when I know Justin Fields isn't playing for the rest of this year, I'm just kind of like, I'm watching for the sake of watching and trying to assess, you know, what guys are showing something for next year. And kind of, you know, as fruitless as it is for me to plan around it, trying to plan around it, and just looking for bright spots more than anything. So I'm generally okay. You know, this game came out about how I expected it to, and about how the numbers, you know, kind of played out like it said it might go.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I can't say I'm surprised by what took place. I mean, for all of those people out there that were saying, and there's some specific people that we could name right now, you know who I'm talking about in the media, that were saying that Andy Dalton was a better option than Justin Fields. I think it's quite clear. After this one, that's not the case at all.
Because yeah,
dude was just absolutely awful for the most part in this game with those four interceptions. Not all of them were on him. I mean,
no.
You know, there was the one for sure with
the second one with Komet. Yeah, I'd say that one was just that you can't put that on Dalton. But the other three were just pretty blatantly, I thought, on him. The first one, you know, I mean that hit. The wide receiver, I forget who it was, it hit his hands, but I mean, it hit his hands way behind him. I think he only got one hand on it. It's not like it, and it wasn't a difficult throw. So that's not one that I would take off of Andy's slay. I still think that's on him. And he did it. He had another one that got dropped. So, I mean, I think four is a fair number for him here.
That's exactly what it should have been. Yeah.
Because
you take that one away. That one, like you said, yeah, that should have been on his ledger too, but that one ends up not being because it was dropped. But, you know, you look at that one, like you said, I think that was to Jakeem Grant, I believe, when he overthrew him. He got his hand on it, but it just, that would have been an insane grab if he makes that grab. So that's definitely on Andy as well.
Also looking at it, like the pocket wasn't super muddy. The throw was wide open and he just missed him.
Yeah, wide open. I mean, you have the first down. You make that pass, you got a first down easy on that one. So, you know, there was just a lot of those situations in the game too where it was, you know, and I'm to the point, I don't know about you, Quentin, and I know you said you're kind of to the point where you just kind of, you expect it basically.
And yeah.
You just kind of know, like, this team's not going anywhere. I don't care if they, not that you don't care, but you just have a feeling they're going to lose or whatever. But I'm getting pissed off, like, even when they succeed, as far as like those shallow crossers and stuff, like when they draw something up and they have a nice completed pass to Demir Byrd that sets up that one with the Montgomery touchdown there. I think it was the first one.
Right.
I get pissed off at those because it's like, dude, you've been calling this and it hasn't been working for how long? And so when it works, it pisses me off now.
Yeah, it's justification for them to keep doing what they're doing.
That's what it feels like, you know. Yeah. We don't need any justification. And right here, worst 24 hours ever from Scott Crawford. Is, a football fandom ever. Yeah, he's a Hawkeyes fan like I am.
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, that makes it a little more glim.
Absolutely terrible. And then you got Brad Mason here. Not enough money. I agree. In the second half, I think they didn't go to enough money. Like, they did in the receiving game. That's something I really wanted to see today, and I pointed that out in the preview episode with Ron. And I said, you got to utilize this guy more in the receiving game because he is that dynamic. He's a threat on both ends. And the fact that you're only using him as a rusher for the most part doesn't make sense to me. Like, this guy, I think he had 141 yards from scrimmage today.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And, man, 8 receptions for, I think it was in the 50s for yards, 90 rushing yards or so with a couple scores, or one score for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Monty had a terrific game. If we're just going to go ahead and point somebody to the offensive side of the ball that really played a really good game, I think Monty had a hell of a game.
Yeah. He was getting a first down, one every 3 touches, basically, 3.5 or like 2.5 to 3 touches, which is just, for a running back, it's a solid rate. I mean, he was one of their leaders in EPA today. I mean, the numbers all line up that say Monty had a great day, and he did. He was powering through tacklers. He was finding the hole. The run blocking wasn't outstanding for him today, but he didn't lose yards on many plays that weren't blocked up well. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that you can always count on him for. He gets, you know, 1-2 yards when there's nothing there.
Yeah, and that was something too, like looking at it, I'm like, they definitely got to run the ball more or utilize the short passing game more so today, which a lot of times I get upset with them using too much of the short passing game. Not enough Montgomery, but just, you know, the stupid play calls that they use.
Yeah.
And I think today was the day you kind of had to do it with the weather.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate too, because this is a Arizona secondary Arizona defense that has been susceptible to big plays this year, especially in the run game. Which is surprising that they're not, that they actually rank pretty well in their explosive plays that they've given up in the passing game. But with the amount they blitz, you know that there's some deep opportunities there. That, you know, they bring 5+ guys a lot. But they've done a good job this year of limiting the passing plays, getting too big on them. But the running plays, yeah, I mean, there were a few times there where I thought Monty was going to break one. I felt like he was on the verge of it. And they kind of, you know, I'm sure time kind of dictated it, but they took it out of his hands, time and score, because, you know, down 2 scores in the second half, you struggle to keep handing the ball off. But that was probably their best chance, because otherwise you're just putting it in Andy Dalton's hands, and we saw the 4 picks.
Right. Yeah, dude. Yeah, you can't put it in that dude's hands. Like, you just can't. I mean, I know he's a veteran. I know he can make plays every once in a while, and it's not like he didn't make any plays. He had connected with Graham there for the touchdown. Jakeem Grant had a really nice grab.
Yeah, that was a great throw on the Jakeem Grant one. I'll give Andy that all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. Like, that's what frustrates you when you watch him play, because he's not horrible as far as backup quarterbacks go. He's probably one of the better backups in the game, but anybody who's been clamoring for this dude to start, like, I just – please, like, enough's enough. Like,
yeah.
Just let's put that to bed. And, I mean, you had kind of an interesting thought. I know some other people have been mentioning it as well on Montgomery. That's not really talking much about the game, but is there anything you wanted to kind of talk about a little bit further with Montgomery?
Yeah, I mean – so I'll preface this with saying I love David Montgomery, and I'd hate to see him play for anyone but the Bears. But also, this is his third year on a 4-year rookie deal. Paying running backs does not often work out that well. And they got a guy in Khalil Herbert who's shown you he can start. He can produce as a starter. I think this offseason – You're short on picks. You might be shopping Montgomery a little bit, especially if he keeps producing where he has been this season. His value is going to be boosted a little bit, and you might be able to get a bit more premium on a pick from a contender who's saying we're just a running back away. You know, So as much as I love Montgomery, I love his play style. I love the way that he runs the ball, the toughness, the heart. Herbert showed you he can start in this league. Obviously, he needs to get better on pass pro and some of the other stuff in the passing game. I mean, there were a few plays today where Herbert blew a pass pro. But that's expected from a rookie running back, and he's expected to get better in the second year at it. And I just think it's all about getting the guys who are going to be there for the rest of Justin Fields' rookie contract. And I don't know if you're going to pay Montgomery or not. And obviously that's you know, above any of our heads, unless we work at Halas Hall, to know if they're going to keep Montgomery around for the long haul. But just the history of paying running back shows you that, you know, it's questionable whether you want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Like, so I don't want to trade Montgomery. I'll be very clear about that. I hear you, and I agree with what you're saying. Like, you have to look ahead, and you got to get some picks back here. We obviously Pace has traded a lot of picks away. You need that equity. So, yeah. I mean, I'm looking at it from your same standpoint of, yeah, you got to get some picks from somewhere. He's probably one of the more valuable pieces that'll allow you to do that. And like you said, you know, you're not going to really pay running backs too much. You don't want to, at least on the second contract. But I look at Montgomery and I see a dude, you kind of mentioned it a little bit, that just, this dude's got fight, man. Like the way he runs, the style of running, obviously he's good in pass pro, but he's a good receiver. Like I don't think the way that the Bears have utilized him over the years, I don't think they've unleashed him yet. Like, yeah. I think his trade value, even, and maybe, like you said, maybe the way that he continues to play here down the stretch, maybe that'll even increase his trade value a little bit. Maybe he kind of pushes himself out of a contract with the Bears because he's playing so well. I just look at it. I think if you are going to trade him, too, it's got to be in the offseason, obviously. But I think get him unleashed. Like, this dude's more dynamic, I think, even in the receiving game than we've even seen. Like some of these other backs that are capable of doing that, like the Alvin Kamaras. I'm not saying he's on that level as a receiver, but I think he's definitely shown that he's very, very good with his hands. And
I think for the 1A level, you know, you got your Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Austin Ecklers, right? And then you have the 1Bs who are the guys who can do it all. But might not excel in the pass game, which is where I think Montgomery sits. He's good at it. It's not his game, his entire game, but it's something that he does very well in and can do really whatever's asked of him with it. He's probably more like a Dalvin Cook in that regard, I would think, where this guy can run inside, he can run outside, he can stay in on pass pro, and he can run routes, catch the ball, and get yards after catch.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. And I mean, like, and, you know, he's very powerful. Like, what you were talking about Khalil Herbert. Khalil Herbert, to me, he did an excellent job filling in for Montgomery those weeks that he was gone. I just think that right now, like you said, I don't think he's quite there on all fronts. Like, I think he's just kind of a downhill runner style. Like he'll see an open space, he'll make the cuts, he'll find the space. And he's quick. Like, he's quick enough to find those holes, and he's got a little bit of burst in him. But I think he's got a little bit to go. And like you said, the second year, you know, yeah, he could probably be – I think these guys right now, they do complement each other really well, though. If they wanted to use them as more of a 1-2 punch, I think it would be excellent. It's just we haven't really seen too much of Herbert lately. But
yeah. Well, something that I really like with Herbert is that – his bread and butter as a runner is outside zone. And when he was in there, you saw the Bears do a lot more play action off outside zone looks where the O-line was blocking in an outside zone type of concept and just not getting too far ahead of the line of scrimmage to make sure that they didn't have a legal man downfield. And that opened up some big time play action shots. And it's one of my biggest issues with Nagy is that he doesn't do that more often when Monty's in there. But I think when Herbert was in there, they were running such heavy outside zone concepts in the run game that they almost had to do some of that with play action. Otherwise, all the defensive linemen would know instantly it's play action because it's not an outside zone look on the whole line.
Yeah, I just and you bring up a great point. Why does this fucker he switches his game plans, yeah, dude? Like from week to week, he'll start doing something that works. The next week he'll just drop it.
Yeah.
He does something that doesn't work and he bangs his head against the wall, just continues to do it over and over again. And like I saw so many stagnant pass concepts today, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Like, dude, why? Okay, if he wasn't the first option on that screen, I'm just gonna bring up one play in particular with David Montgomery on that screen. That was he was lined up out wide, and it was a wide receiver screen.
Yeah.
Now, if he's not the first option, because it didn't look like Dalton was looking at him at first, and maybe that was a delayed screen, which, yeah, first of all, was just so dumb because it was so long and late developing.
Like, was this the one that got picked off?
No. It was the one that was – which I guess I should have brought up something that actually was catastrophic. But just this play in particular just drove me absolutely insane and up the wall. It was so long and slow developing on that play, that screen – if he's not the first option, you got Montgomery lined up out wide. If he's not the first option on that play for the screen, then he shouldn't be running that type of a route. Like, why is he just sitting there? He's a sitting duck right there. And they're playing off, playing back, but they're just sitting there waiting for him to get the ball.
Yeah.
And it was so dumb, dude. Like, move forward, move, like, do a slant, something on that play. It just made
there's something to dictate the angle that a defender has to come at them, as opposed to letting the defender dictate the angle they have on Monty.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, man. And that's just one of many. Like,
yeah,
you know, because we see stuff like that. That it's just all the time. Like, it's just like stagnant routes.
Yeah.
That he's having these guys run, and then sometimes just all the same. Like, he's got the guys, he's got them running like basically the same routes side by side or all in congested areas. That drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah, no, that's the static routes are Nagy special. He loves them, and they're maddening, absolutely maddening. It's like how boring and predictable can we make our passing offense sometimes? And the flip side of that card is how weird and unpredictable can we make it, and can we do it so much that it doesn't work?
Like, right.
You know,
do it so crazy and so like out there that they weren't expecting it, but it still fails.
Like, there was one play today where the check down was a little wheel route by Jakeem Grant from it was either out of the backfield or out of the inside slot. So he's almost lined up like a tight end almost. Mm-hmm. But the wheel route was so slow developing. It was like the pass pro was fine. It didn't hold up, but it was fine. Typically, you know, he probably had 3 seconds to get the ball out. But the route wasn't ready until after that 3 seconds. And it's like, this is your safety route, you know, like – It needs to be there right away in case everything goes bad. And it took at least 2.5 seconds for it to even develop. And it was just like, that's a bad safety route.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That wasn't the play that wasn't the double reverse, right? The double reverse.
No, that was bad. That turned good. But no, this was the one that I'm thinking of ended up in a sack. It was like,
okay, yeah.
The pass pro wasn't great, but it should have been enough to get by, and it wasn't because the route concepts were not good.
Yeah, man. I'm with you. I don't fucking get it. This dude will never understand. Like, sometimes you can be simple, but it'll work, and the other times, like, just don't do the same thing all the time. Like,
yeah,
you're so predictable too in the red zone. Like,
yeah.
That's what drives me nuts.
So the red zone play to Jimmy Graham, I mean, it was a good play, and it worked. So it's like, you can't knock it too much. Yeah,
you can't knock it.
But like, you got 3 tight ends all wide. It just makes no sense to me. Like, you're spacing the field, and I get that, but you're spacing it with a bunch of plotters who run like a refrigerator. Like,
they're not going to get, how can they get that much separation in that little of a space too?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess even for, it was a pick route, and to have a big guy like that saying the pick, I get it. Like, that does make sense. But why do you have Jesse James wide on the other side? Why not have Mooney wide on the other, like anyone else, in case that gets beaten? Like, you're talking about a one option play. That's what they ran on. What was it? Third? It was either third or fourth on the one. Like,
yeah,
it just didn't make sense to me.
I agree. And it worked, so you can't complain.
Right.
It's like, we've seen this all season, this stupid, that type of play call. We've seen it all season. We've seen it his entire tenure here with Chicago. So that's what drives you absolutely nuts, because, you know, he shouldn't be applauded. Like, I don't want to give him credit for doing something that the defense probably knew that he was going to do.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, maybe that pick route was, I mean, that was a little bit slightly different than, like, usually it's like a Jimmy Graham fade all the time. But, like,
yeah, that's exactly what I was expecting when I saw that personnel package. I was like, all right, here comes the Graham fade.
Yeah. And what's even more ridiculous than that, I had Jimmy Graham's prop, his receiving yards over 11 and a half. I don't think he got that, but he just kept getting the ball. Like, he had that 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
So, and then he had that 1-yard receiving touchdown. So it's like,
yeah,
can you use him when he's not in the red zone? If you paid him all this money, you don't have to use him just in the red zone. Like, I know that
makes you wonder if that's all he practices, is red zone package.
Literally walked out there. I'm like, oh, are you ready for that pick route? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so let's go ahead and move over to the defensive side of the ball too. Now that we're, I mean, the 33 points in this game given up, but a lot of that, I think we agreed to talking before the show, a lot of it was based off the turnovers, the interception.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bears owned the time of possession. They really, it's not like they were moving the ball that terrific, but not very, the Cardinals had 5 yards per play on offense, and the Bears had 4.6 yards per play. So they weren't too terribly far off in that regard, but the turnovers absolutely killed them. How do you feel about the way that the defense played in this one?
I mean, it's hard to be too upset with it. Like, it's a lot of points, but, like, they're playing a bunch of guys who are not going to be on the team next year. A bunch of injuries, you know, which, I mean, if you want to talk about the age of the roster on that side of the ball, I think that's completely fair. They need to bring in a lot this offseason to help it. But, like, you look at this stat line. Arizona had a 12-yard touchdown drive, followed by a 21 yards gained, and then a field goal, followed by a punt, and then 51-yard drive with a field goal. And then in the second half, they had one drive that was over 50 yards. They had a 70-yard touchdown drive in there, which that one, you know, that one stings more because you let them go the length of the field on you. But after that, they had a 15-yard touchdown drive and a 28-yard touchdown drive. You consistently give teams the ball in your territory, you're going to give up a lot of points in today's NFL, where everything is geared towards helping the offense. It's just that simple, especially when you're playing a team with this high powered of an offense.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, man. I think anytime you give a team short fields like that, it's just never, it's not a recipe for success. You can't do that. Like, you put your defense in such a hole when you consistently give them the short fields.
Yeah.
That you're asking them basically to play near perfect.
I mean, coming into this game, you knew that the defense was not going to be able to be all that. No Mac. Yeah. Roquan's banged up. You know, I mean, they're playing a lot of backup caliber guys right now. And if they don't make changes in the offseason, they will continue to play a lot of backup caliber guys next year. Is really where I see it. No Hicks wasn't out there, which I don't know much about his injury. I know it's his ankle. I don't know if it's a high ankle sprain or something, but it seems like he's been missing for a while now, and kind of surprising he didn't end up on IR. But just you're working with a pretty empty cupboard here on the defensive side. We're really on both sides, but we're talking defense right now. So, yeah. the whoever is the GM next year, whether it be Ryan Pace or someone else, that they got some work cut out for them, because this team's depth is questionable and their starters are older. I mean, just flat out. I mean, I love Akeem Hicks. I don't know if he's going to be back here next year. I don't know if they can afford to bring him back. And with his injuries the last few years, I don't know if it's a logical move for them to do it. I think Robert Quinn could be another guy that you're looking at and saying, this guy has some trade value. We might be able to get a pick for him. A contender might be saying, you know, we'll give you a fourth round pick for that pass rusher who could be the final piece for us to really make a Super Bowl push here. And he's played outstanding this year, so it sucks to say, but it's also, I don't know when the last time was that Quinn put together two good years in a row. And he's what, 32, 33, something like that. I was texting with a buddy of mine earlier today, and he asked me, you know, who are the 10 players that you would keep if you could, no matter what, on this Bears team? And it's hard to come up with 10. Like when you're looking at it, that you feel like are going to give you two more years of good production. I mean, we said like Mac, just because he is older, but one, you can't get out of that contract, so you got him, and two, he's a consistent producer. He's an all-time player at his position. He's a guy who has produced every year that he's on the field. You have faith that if he just avoids major injuries, he's going to keep doing what he does. Jalen Johnson, Darnell Mooney. I threw Eddie Jackson in there because I still believe that Jackson provides a lot of value in the back end. Roquan Smith was an obvious one. And then after that, it gets – and then Justin Fields, obviously. So that could see a six. But after those six, it's kind of a toss-up. I was, you know, looking at Travis Gibson – I'd like, because he's young and on a rookie contract, Khalil Herbert, Montgomery, one of those two, depending on how you're valuing money and, you know, having to pay a guy. But it's really a toss-up from that point to get to 10, which just isn't enough if you want to be a good football team.
Well, I don't know. Did you mention Mooney? I can't remember if you did.
I said Mooney. Okay. He was one of the six that you're saying, like,
yeah,
we definitely want there. I mean, ideally, you'd have Tevin Jenkins in there and Larry Borum.
Borum has
continued to look solid, but you want to see more before I'm saying that. That's a definite. And then with Jenkins, you got to see him play before he can truly say it, you know?
Yeah.
You got to know that these back issues are behind him.
Yeah. Somebody was asking if he'd made the field at all today. Did he get any snaps?
Yeah. He was playing on extra point attempts. He was out there.
Yeah,
which I didn't see him on offense, but
I didn't see him on offense either. But we can obviously go back and check that once
snap
counts come out,
which is not
it's hard unexpected. To tell on the first watch sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
but
well, it's not unexpected that he, you know, is pretty limited on snaps. The guy's getting into game shape. He's been recovering from a back surgery. Backs are tough, you know. That's you're very limited after a back surgery on what you can and can't do. This guy's trying to get back in football shape. I wasn't expecting him to play a whole lot today.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I didn't think he was honestly going to play really at all. I mean, I know you want to get him some limited snaps and stuff, so that was good. I'm glad that they did that. But I just, you know, I wasn't really expecting it at all. And it's cool to see him active, though, you know, because we weren't sure. I mean, the way it was going, it sounded like, you know, obviously he returned to practice a little while ago, but we weren't sure, you know, earlier in the year if he would be back at all. The way that it was sounding was like he just having all these issues and, you know, it was worse than we thought originally, or they thought when they drafted him. So,
yeah, it was feeling like Chris Williams deja vu, you know, just all over again. He's second round pick, another high draft pick, offensive tackle that has a back surgery and then doesn't play as a rookie. Or like if you look at wide receiver Kevin White, you know, has an injury, high draft pick, doesn't play at all as a rookie. And then you go into year two just not really knowing what you have. So that it is very, I'm very happy that we are going to get to, I assume we'll get to see him play some offensive snaps down the stretch here and kind of be able to get an idea of what the Bears have in him, mm-hmm. you know, because at this point it's, that's the question. What can we count on this guy for next year?
Yeah. And I know some people have also tossed out their guard as being a possibility too, to see,
yeah,
you know, for so, now, but
I don't like the, I would rather Jason Peters isn't going to be here for the long haul. You know, he's 39 years old. I love it. I love him. I love what he's done for the Bears this year. But if Jenkins is supposed to be a left tackle for the Bears, you play him at left tackle. I mean, that's the way I see it. If he's going to be a right tackle, you play him at right tackle and figure out what to do with Borum. Borum has more experience at guard, than either of the tackles on the Bears, or any of the tackles on the Bears roster, I believe, except for maybe Ifedi. He played guard in high school, played a little bit of guard in college. He's a guy who's more used to being shifted around the offensive line across his entire football career than a guy like Jenkins, who has, you know, really been a tackle everywhere he's been. And I always get nervous about moving guys around on the offensive line earlier in their career. Especially guys who don't have experience being moved around, just because it's tough. It's tough for them to change sides left to right. It's the whole spiel. I'm sure you've heard before. It's like wiping after going to the bathroom left-handed. Like, it's just, it's different.
Yeah, right.
Your form isn't the same.
Yeah, you're not used to, you know, the exact way. You're gonna miss some stuff if you use your left hand and your right hand.
Instead of leaning on your left leg, you're leaning on your right leg, and it just doesn't quite feel right. You know, that's the analogy everyone likes to throw out there for switching sides. Which is the concern you have even with putting Jenkins at left tackle, but that's where he got reps in training camp before he got hurt. That's where the Bears have said that they want him. So if that's it, if that's what they want to do, I say do it. Don't try to push the guy into guard.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I wouldn't even be against, like, it's been thrown out there too that maybe Jason Peters at left guard.
Like, yeah, I know. So
the bookends, like you were talking about, you want those two guys, those youngsters, to see if they can be the future bookends. So. Yeah. Maybe just let them, especially if Justin Fields, I mean, he might even be back next week. But and you don't want anybody to be playing horrible at the tackle spot when he's out there. But, like,
I mean, and that is the concern I have with just saying we're throwing a new guy out there is if Fields is in. It's like it's a weird balance that you got to find there of, like, how much do we need to find out what we have for next year versus how much do we need to make sure we're protecting Fields right now so he continues to develop?
Especially dealing with the injury already that he has. And, you know, I don't want anything else to make it worse. He gets back out there and, you know, all of a sudden he's banged up again or something. I mean, I would absolutely hate that. And I think if you wanted to, like, there's different ways that you can go about this where you can throw a little extra protection on that side, maybe the tight end. Putting him over there and maybe just give Tevin Jenkins just a few more snaps next week and just see, like, you don't have to play him the whole game, but let's see if he can go out there for, you know, 10% of the snaps next week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, especially if you're down multiple scores late, I'd love to see them just put him in and say, all right, this is your shot. Let's see what you got. Because, you know, it's, if you're not going to come back, you might as well find out what you have to build with for the future.
Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, Kyler Murray, like, you know, obviously dealing with this ankle injury today, he looked good. Like, I mean, I know you were talking about it too. Like, he's had quite a bit of time to kind of recover from this.
Yeah.
And the Cardinals, obviously, it made sense for them to be safe with it. They're thinking they're trying to make a push here. But they don't need to overdo it with the record that they're at. I mean, pretty good spot. And, I mean, he was, like, shot faking guys. He looked like James Harden, except the much faster version.
Yeah.
But
I think he's probably back to 100% at this point. I mean, had they lost their first game with Colt McCoy starting for them, I wouldn't have been surprised had they rushed Kyler back a little bit. But when they won that first game, it was like, okay, let Kyler take his time. We've got some leeway here. And then Colt, I think he won two or three. So it's like, you know, that they were able to kind of let him take his time and get back to full health for this final playoff push. And I mean, he looked like he was as fast as ever. So
yeah. And he didn't have to do too much in the passing game, like we said. He only threw the ball 15 times in this game. So it was like, you know, every time it seemed like, though, he would get pushed out of the pocket and he would make something happen with his legs that, you know, he hasn't really been doing as much this season, even when he's been out there. But we've seen it. Like, he's incredible. He's got speed. So anytime you don't have that extra spy on him, or, you know, just like, you have to be really aware. I mean, one of those plays, for sure, Roquan, I mean, dude, just like, he was not going to outrun Roquan, which is incredible because he's dealing with an injury himself, obviously, with the hamstring injury. But I mean, I still thought for the most part he had a pretty solid game, all things considered. What do you think about Roquan?
Yeah, I thought there were two plays that I marked down as, like, they felt like they're plays that Roquan usually makes and didn't. But the guy's playing a little banged up. You expect that a little bit. But outside of that, I had him making four impact plays outside of that. And he, like you said, I'm pretty sure he was spying Kyler for a lot of the game, and he was assigned onto the mesh point of the play action and all the noise that the Cardinals like to put in around the shotgun snap with the, you know, they do a lot of jet, they do a lot of movement with Rondale Moore and James Conner coming in and out of the backfield, and you don't know where the ball's going. And it felt like on a lot of those plays, it was Roquan's job to just make sure he follows the ball. And he did it for the most part very well today. So, I mean, he's a little banged up. He still looks like Roquan Smith. He's still making plays out there, moving well, moving fast, and just staying aggressive. And I love watching that guy play. It's like listening to music, man. He's just – it's beautiful.
Yeah, dude, he's fucking insane. I mean, he just
– as long as you can keep an offensive lineman off of him.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. Like, he – and like you said, he wasn't a complete 100% health, but he's just such a gamer, dude. Like, he wants to be out there. He's a force to be reckoned with when he's out there. Obviously, the sideline to sideline speed. I mean, didn't quite have the full giddy up today, but – still made it happen. And I mean, some other guys were making plays too. Like, they had that solid, real solid goal line stand there, with Travis Gibson stepping up.
Yeah.
And Roquan, Robert Quinn. And Robert Quinn just continues to play like lights out all season. But Travis Gibson looks like a real dude, man.
Yeah. Like, well, so, and on that drive too, one play that I think gets underrated is, Eddie Jackson making a stop at the one. He chased down James Conner. He had no right getting to him, and got to him and got him out at the one, which in the moment seems like nothing because he got the first down. They're at the one, but that's what created the goal line stand. I was glad to see Eddie make that play. But yeah, Gibson, I mean, I've been on this guy's train since training camp, since I saw the picture of all the weight he put on in the offseason. He's got some potential. I'm very excited to see him keep playing more.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you knew, like, he had the motor coming out of college. Like, he had the motor and he had the length. And I know that's something that the Bears scouts, the scouting department really loved about him was his length. And they seemingly developed him, and they found another steal.
I mean, it looked like he put on 30, 40 pounds this offseason. He got big.
Wow. Oh, yeah. He beefed up a little bit. And now he, not only is he using, like, that speed and getting around guys, he's, like, he can bull rush you, too.
Yeah.
He's not getting tossed. So it's fun to watch him play right now. And
he does struggle a little with the read options and not over-pursuing. That's one thing I have noticed with him, but that's something that hopefully comes with time. I mean, that's something that Robert Quinn still struggles with. We saw it a few times today where the Cardinals were going at Quinn with that, and he was just over pursued on one guy or the other. But that's something you hope with Gibson, just, you know, comes with time and experience to seeing it at the NFL level with NFL speed.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is really his first consistent action in the NFL. Yeah. Like last year, he didn't really play consistently. It was kind of, you know, here and there as like a rotational piece.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was a little bit more of a rotational piece earlier, and now he's getting more consistent snaps, I would say.
So, yeah, with Mac going on IR, he's pretty much the starter opposite Quinn out there, I believe.
Yeah, no, he's pretty much the guy out there, and it's cool to see that he's developed into being able to do that. I mean,
yeah.
So, but you still got a little ways to go. I mean, you mentioned the lack of depth, and we were talking about some of these guys not being on the roster come next year, which, you know, a lot of them we don't really want to see. You know, you were mentioning beforehand about Kendall Vildor should be playing a lot more slot, which is coming out of college. That's what he was pretty much a natural. He felt like a natural nickel corner, or slot corner. And I mean, you had Xavier Crawford today. Just look absolutely pathetic, man. Yeah. Like this dude got James Conner had a one-handed catch. That was a terrific catch, an absolutely terrific catch.
Yeah.
And Crawford put like the worst attempt at a tackle.
That was so ugly. That was just so bad.
I don't even know what that was, dude. That pissed me off to almost no end. And then I know he's a part-time player. He shouldn't be playing in the game regularly. He should probably just be a special team.
Yeah, he should be a special teams guy through and through. You know, core four-phase special teamer. But the Bears lack depth in the secondary, so he's a starter. And it's perplexing to me as far as, like, you thought high enough of this 5'9" undersized corner that you thought he could start on the outside for you to start the year for half the season. He was doing that. And then when he realized that a 5'9" guy can't do that because just the size difference, there have been multiple times this year where Vildor's coverage was fine, but he just couldn't make up the size difference on the outside. Against Claypool especially comes to mind, against Pittsburgh. But because, I mean, he's given, 8 inches to the guy, 7 inches? That's a big difference. I think I just got cut out there.
What's that?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, you're good.
Okay. My computer went dead on me.
Okay.
But it's coming back up. And then you're saying, okay, well, he can't play outside anymore. That's fine. But try him in the slot. You got 2 more years on a rookie contract with this guy. He's built to be a slot corner. See what he can do at the slot corner now. Like I've said over and over on this show so far, you're playing right now to figure out who is here for the next 2-3 years, who you can count on, what their role can be. Why would you not be trying to find this out on the guy who's on a rookie contract and has 2 more years with you?
Yep. And just, that's the thing.
It blows my mind.
That's why I was asking you. I'm like, was he even active today? Because I didn't see him at all once. I know he was out there a little bit, but like, it makes no sense to me that you got other guys out there. And I know Vildor's like, I've been basically saying, get this dude off the field, but like, you got to try him where his strength lies. Like, it's all about matchups. It's all about where you're positioning guys. I don't want to see him on any tight ends. I don't want to see Duke Shelly on any tight ends, like those big Mark Andrews type of players. Yeah. Like, I don't want to see those matchups, but he's not an outside corner either, but he could be sticky enough on the inside and the slot. Like he could definitely guard some of these. Like, I know Rondale Moore is extremely fast, but say he's in the slot. I mean, he probably lines up pretty decently with like a Rondale Moore or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing with slot corner too is like you're talking about a position that typically, and maybe the Bears, it's hard to tell with Desai how they're running coverages a lot of the times. But typically, I mean, if you're in quarters, you got the two outside corners and you got the two safeties, and those are your four deep. So the slot is covering his guy or his own, and he has help over the top no matter where he's at.
Right.
So, like, that's why press corners, press man guys do so well in the slot. And even if they're undersized, because they can just attack off the line of scrimmage. And that's what Shelly too, but I'd never thought as high of him as I did Vildor as a press man guy. That's what Vildor does well, which makes me just, between his size and what he does well, he just makes sense for the slot to me, and we haven't seen it.
I think, honestly, and maybe I'm in a little disagreement with you, but I think both of those guys project as better slot corner guys. Like,
yeah,
I think Duke Shelly, like even him coming out of college, like he was known as more of a sticky type of dude.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't like somebody you trust like deep in coverage, but you know, probably could get burned. But I mean, I think, you know, you also look at, I mean, Xavier Crawford, dude, he was, even when he was being aggressive today, like he held on to a dude for like 20 yards down the field and got a penalty. Like, just not playing with your head at all.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And I mean, and you're right. Shelly, I mean, he projected as a slot guy. I was really just saying that the Bears coming into this year, they had him as the slot guy. And right. I never bought in on Shelly as much as I did Vildor. And not even to say that I thought Vildor was going to be a great outside starting corner. He seemed like a guy outside to me. But on the inside, I do think there is some potential there. We just haven't seen it. We haven't seen him get the chance there either.
Right. Yeah, I agree. He's got to be given the chance there, at least to see what you got. I mean, you got him on, like you said, the rookie contract. There's no point in not seeing what you have. So, with that said, let's go ahead and give some game balls away. I mean, I know, or whatever, our players of the game on both offense and defense. Like, we didn't win the game, so I can't give him the game ball. But who do you think, like, who was your offensive dude for this game?
You know, Monty's going to be the obvious guy that, you know, he was a clear, the best player on offense for the Bears, carried the load for them all in all. So to go a little bit away from the obvious, though, I got to go to my Texas Tech Red Raider, Jakeem Grant. He made some plays today.
Mm-hmm. He was pretty impressive, man. He was. And he's a fast little shit.
Yeah. Like,
that dude, he's so quick, and that's why he's good in the return game too. But he when he's out in open space, and he can create space too, he made a hell of a catch on that one ball too.
Yeah, the red zone catch was nice. He had a big gainer in there, I think, 34 yards. That was a nice play by him, and he's a demon with the speed, man. I love me some Jakeem Grant, so I'm probably pretty biased on this, but I just wanted to get a little less obvious with it.
No, that's a good one. I mean, since you're being less obvious, I'll just be obvious, I guess, because he was my guy going into the game. He's always been my guy. Like, I really, he's one of my favorite players. I mean, on the Bears, if not the favorite, David Montgomery, like that guy. He makes something out of nothing on the plays that where he probably should be brought down for like a 2 yard gain. He'll pick up four, he'll pick up five. And then, you know, we saw in the receiving game today with those 8 catches, I believe, you know, he can do that as well. So we needed that from him. It's just a shame that the turnovers kind of caused this team to not really play even as well as they were playing, because they weren't playing horribly on offense. It's just, you know, the turnovers really set them back and set back the defense. So I'll give it to Montgomery, man. I think he did what he had to do today. And I love the fact that he went over on all of his props that I bet on. So definitely my player of the game there. What do you think about the defensive side of the ball? I guess, well, before we do that, I don't know. I think we did talk a little bit about Cole Kmet, and he wasn't the only one with the drop. Like, Mooney had a bad drop in there. At least one that I consider a bad drop.
Yeah.
And then Kmet, just, he did not have a good game today at all. So if you want to say like least valuable player of the game or whatever on the offensive side, it's probably Kmet. I don't know. It could be maybe a lineman too, but
I mean, it could be Dalton too with the 4 picks.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. No, you got to get, I was, yeah.
If we're going non QB, I hate to rag on an individual offensive lineman, but when you're snapping the ball and you have 3-4, even in wet conditions, that come out the way that they did today, I mean, Sam Mustipher was a red flag today.
It was horrible.
In a few ways. But especially just on getting the ball out. I mean, it's step one of any offensive play. You need to get the ball to the quarterback. I understand it's wet conditions, but a guy who played at Notre Dame, I would hope, would be more consistent with that.
Yeah. It was horrible, man. And I, at one point, I think it was at halftime, I checked the box score, and they actually gave him credit for a carry.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's still there or not, but it wasn't a carry. Like, it was a ridiculous play.
Yeah.
Like, he just played horrible. I mean, I don't know. We weren't really planning on doing the least valuable player of the game.
Now, also, I do feel bad ragging on Mustipher, though, because I don't know how he impacts the line calls and what he does. So, I mean, for all I know, his line calls and adjustments at the line could be why Montgomery was able to have such a good day, too. So, I mean, that's why I say I hate to rag an individual offensive lineman, because it's not always as simple as the picture, the numbers paint, or the obvious. But he's got to get those snaps right.
that's one for sure where, you know, like, it's not about assignments and who's calling what. It's you have to do that. that's just ABCs right there. You should know. So, anyways, with that said, let's move to the defensive side. Who was your defensive player of the game?
Man, that's a tough one. Just because they didn't have a ton of plays out there, and there wasn't anyone who made a significant impact, like, in a box score way. You know, I'm probably going to have to give it to Roquan, just for like I was saying, for following the conflict point on so many of those busy handoffs, fakes, all the play action option game that Arizona does, and sniffing out a handful of them. Eddie Jackson, I think, kept a cap on things a lot too today. He kept them from making too many big, like, he made some tackles that if he messed up could have been a lot worse, but you hate to give a guy something for that, for not being the worst. So I'm probably gonna have to go with Roquan on that. Roquan made a handful of plays that I think were very positive for the Bears.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. It was tough for me as well. I think just some of the big stops that were made, I mean, how can you not give it to Robert Quinn, too? He's just been doing it all year. I know it wasn't like his greatest game ever, this game. So, but it's hard for me to kind of sway away from Robert Quinn. I think it's just he's one of the real continuousies this season. That's really just he shows up, man. He shows up every game. Like, you know, he might not get as much help some games, but – you know, obviously with Khalil Mack out, it's sometimes a little harder. I know Travis Gibson has stepped in and gotten some nice pressure too. He didn't have a bad game. So I like both of those guys, but it's hard to give. I guess if I had to, I'd probably just give it to Quinn though.
Yeah.
So with that said, I mean, once again, the Bears lose 33-22. Did you have any kind of final thoughts, I guess, about this game, Quentin?
You know, ultimately, like I said to start the show, it's kind of, I'm not too emotional on it just because it's kind of, like I said, don't want to say checked out, but, you know, I didn't expect the Bears to really compete in this game. They actually made it a little closer than I thought it would be. But his final thoughts is it's all about figuring out what is going to be here to help Justin Fields and what you need next year and the year after, and what determining what you need to add to max out that team and those teams around him. So, I mean, the rest of the year to me is just figuring that out, figuring out what guys are flashing here and there, what guys are pieces for the future, and what guys are a lot, probably half the Bears roster is out of contract after this year. Which guys are you going to let go, and who are you going to replace them with? And do you have an in-house replacement ready, or is it something you need to find this offseason?
Yeah, I completely agree, man. It's all about the future, really, at this point, because this season's a wash. I mean,
well, and that's the bright spot, though. We got Justin Fields.
Yeah,
like the goal is it's only better from here. So it's just finding out how to make that the reality.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not all terrible. Like, it could be worse. We could just be sitting here and not have a quarterback of the future and just have all these problems going into the offseason. I know we still have some games to play, which, speaking of, we have the Green Bay Packers next Sunday night.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a preview episode for that, some variation. Or
excuse me while I have PTSD of last year's Sunday night football Packers game.
Well, why did they continue? They didn't even flex this game out. I don't understand it. They should not be putting the Bears on primetime, period. But against the Packers, nonetheless, this is just like a present for the Packers.
Yeah.
Like, why are you giving this to them? They don't need presents.
This is the NFL begging the McCaskies to fire Matt Nagy.
That's what it's like.
To get embarrassed on national television by the Packers again.
I guess we should be thanking them.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because we would love nothing more, at least I would love nothing more than to see Matt Nagy gone. So with that said, I mean, there were some sponsors here that I should probably shout out, and we didn't do that at the top of the show. But like I said, you know, Ron was at the game. Buzz was at the game today. Check those guys out at Loose on Tap, at Buzz on Tap. But if you wanted to join them at the game or go to another Bears game or any game, you could definitely go to vividseats.com and then use the promo code on tap and spend $100 there on tickets or whatever, and you can get $10 back. So, you know, buy a beer, do whatever you want. So that's promo code on tap at vividseats.com. Just enter that. And also Bet Rivers deposit match up to $250 if you enter the promo code on tap by going to betrivers.com. So, you know, I'm a gambler, you know, obviously run the on tap bets show. I know you're a gambler, Quentin. You got your own podcast going too. So, but yeah, with that said, we are Bears on Tap. Follow us at Bears on Tap, and then check out ontapsportsnet.com for all your Chicago sports needs. We've got articles on pretty much everything. We've got podcasts, pretty much anything Chicago sports related, and, you know, beer stuff, everything. So
yeah, go read the head coaching profiles I'm putting out. I got Kellen Moore, Brian Daboll, Greg Roman, and Byron Leftwich out on the website. In-depth numbers look, tape review, looking at their tendencies as play callers, their past history of their time in the league and how well they could build a staff with their coaching network, all sorts of stuff on each of these guys. So if you want to try to pick out who your favorite guy is for the Bears to hire after Nagy, we got you covered.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely encourage anybody listening or watching to check those out, because those pieces are incredible. Quentin puts a ton of work into them, and I'm learning a lot about these different coaches, even if I might know a little bit about them, but he dives full into them. So it's pretty good stuff there. Obviously, check out the preview episode whenever we put that out, probably Wednesday, maybe Thursday. I don't know, for the Packers, Bears-Packers game Sunday night. You'll have somebody, some variation of either me, Quentin, B-Don, and or Ron. So the four of us, we'll have probably a trio of us on that episode. So, yeah, anyways, Bears lost, a rough one that we kind of all saw coming. But, yeah, what do you say, Quentin?
On to 2022, onward and upward.
And bear down.
And bear down.